Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, pharmacist Eric Christensen. You can certainly track me down on LinkedIn or at meded101.com as well. Just hit the contact button there and shoot me a message. If you have any comments, questions, concerns, this is the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast, of course. You can go to reallifepharmacology.com. and hit the free top 200 study guide in the upper right-hand corner of the page. Go ahead and subscribe there, and you will get updates when we've got a new podcast available. So definitely go check that out. Get your free 31-page PDF, too, on the top 200 drugs. Great little refresher and or a little study guide if you're preparing for pharmacology or board exams. So go check that out. So let's get into the drug of the day today, and that is simvastatin. So if you've listened to every podcast episode, which I'm guessing most of you probably haven't, but you may remember that we did cover statins in general. And I wanted to branch out and dig a little bit deeper on some of these individual agents because there are subtle differences amongst the statin agents. So with that said, the mechanism of action of simvastatin, brand name Zocor, is going to be the same as I covered before. It inhibits HMG-CoA reductase. If you remember, this is the rate-limiting step in basically producing cholesterol. Okay, and that's ultimately going to lower LDL production. And when we do those, when we check our blood for cholesterol levels, hopefully with the use of the medication, those levels will be reduced. But I'll talk a little bit further about monitoring parameters. Use of this medication, lowering cardiovascular risk, lowering cholesterol, and things of that nature, of course. So uniquely, let's talk about some quirks with simvastatin. So one of the most important things, I think, is dosing. So there are lots of different dosing quirks with simvastatin, and some are based off of drug interactions, which I'll talk about towards the end of the podcast. But there is a maximum recommended dose of 40 milligrams. However, if patients have been on 80 milligrams for more than a year and they've tolerated it, there is a caveat that says you can continue that dose. But you got to be careful about drug interactions and other things going on with that dose, and obviously monitoring for adverse effects. So I did just the other day, this is in the year 2020, I did just the other day see a patient on simvastatin 80 milligrams daily, and they were tolerating it okay and all that sort of stuff. So the other important clinical pearl I'd point out is if you see somebody on simvastatin, you might just check their allergy intolerance list because they may have had an intolerance to some of the other statins, but for whatever reason, they seem to tolerate simvastatin. So that's one example where you might see somebody on simvastatin. And the other example is somebody that's been on it for a long time and we've never really switched it. Okay, because most patients now are going to be on atorvastatin or rosuvastatin because they're a little bit more potent agents and maybe not quite so associated with some of the myopathy risks, particularly at higher doses, as simvastatin is. Okay, so adverse effect profile, really not much difference across the board with statins in general. Myopathy, rhabdomyolysis. Again, rhabdomyolysis is extremely rare, but extremely serious. If it does happen, I've only seen a handful of cases throughout my 10-plus year career now as a clinical pharmacist. So I did want to mention adherence with cholesterol medications in general, and basically this can be applied to any medication that manages a disease state where the patient doesn't necessarily feel a benefit. Okay, we're preventing bad outcomes like heart attack and stroke. Patients tend to stop taking these medications over time, and or it may be very difficult to convince them to continue to take it. Again, they don't feel a benefit because we're preventing a significant effect when using these medications. So that's definitely a problem, and adherence rates with statins in general can be, yeah, not very good. So a couple of tips on tracking that adherence. Obviously, we can talk with the patients, we can ask them about it, but there are a couple of things that we can do that we don't have to really get the patient's perspective. So we can check cholesterol levels. If we know that the drug has brought those cholesterol levels down, and all of a sudden you see a big spike back up in cholesterol levels, adherence could be one of the factors that's causing that. Maybe they quit taking it. Maybe they got nervous. Maybe they had a family member that had a reaction. Whatever the case may be for that patient, checking those cholesterol levels is a decent way to assess adherence, because it may be one of the contributing factors towards an elevated cholesterol level. One other thing that I think some forget about once in a while is if you're in a clinic, if you're a provider prescribing these medications, give the pharmacy a call that's dispensing that medication, and we can track those records and how often the patient's getting the medication filled and all that sort of stuff. So important to remember that as a potential option to help us really monitor that adherence and make sure patients are not putting themselves at higher risk for cardiovascular events by quitting their statin if indeed they need it, and certainly it's indicated there. I mentioned, you know, lipids. That's something we're going to potentially monitor over time to see if we're having a benefit, as well as potentially adherence concerns. A couple other monitoring questions that come up are CPK and LFTs. So these are really done as clinically indicated. We don't routinely check a CPK. If patients are having symptoms of myopathy, that's a situation where we might consider checking a CPK. Same thing with LFTs. We might do a baseline right when we first start the drug, but we're probably not going to check them very often, unless there's maybe other risk factors or something. We're probably not going to check them routinely unless we have a reason to, a clinical indication to do so. Other monitoring things, you know, we're going to look out for adverse effects, things of that nature. The lipids I mentioned as well. All right, one pharmacogenomic thing that's unique to simvastatin that I did want to mention is the gene SLC01B1. Now, this is something I have seen come up on board exams as far as questions, things like that. This genetic variation in this SLC01B1 gene may put patients at risk, or at higher risk, for having statin-induced myopathy, and particularly true with simvastatin, or the strongest evidence we have with this gene variation is with simvastatin. So that's one to kind of remember that I definitely have seen come up. And, you know, as we go forward in the future, I think we're going to get more and more information on genetics and how understanding that different gene variants may put patients at risk for various adverse effects. A couple other pharmacokinetics, pharmacodynamics things. Lipophilic, so simvastatin is more lipophilic than hydrophilic. So if you remember the lipophilic statins, that's simvastatin, atorvastatin, and lovastatin. Hydrophilic, rosuvastatin, pravastatin. Now, clinically, why this matters, if I've got a lipophilic statin on board and I know a patient's had troubles with it or adverse effects, it might make a lot of sense to try a hydrophilic statin rather than another lipophilic statin. All right, so those are, I think, are some of the most important points with simvastatin here. I'm going to take a quick break, and I want to finish up on drug interactions, which definitely simvastatin is an important one to remember there. So let's take a quick break from our sponsor, and we will get back with drug interactions in a second here. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material like BCGP, BCPS, ambulatory care, medication therapy management, or the NAPLEX exam, definitely go check out meded101.com/store. We've got links to all the different resources there. If you're a nurse, physician, pharmacy technician, and you're looking for more clinical education, medication education, recent books we've put out, drug interactions in primary care, so check that one out. We've also just recently put out a guide to drug-food interaction, which is, we've got a list of the top 500 drugs, or over 500 drugs, I believe, and some of the most common drug-food considerations that you might look at with those agents, as well as a bunch of other info. So, again, links to all these resources that can be applicable to all different healthcare professions, go to meded101.com/store. All right, so speaking of drug interactions and potentially drug-food interactions, we've got to remember grapefruit juice and simvastatin. Grapefruit juice inhibits CYP3A4. That can greatly raise concentrations of simvastatin, and we can run into, you know, risk of rhabdomyolysis and myopathy, and an increased risk for adverse effects in general. Another one, maybe not necessarily a food, but it may be more of a supplement, red yeast rice may have statin components in it, so that could increase the risk of toxicity with simvastatin and other statins in general. Okay, so some specific drug interactions with simvastatin that actually have dosing recommendations. Amiodarone's an example here, where we've got a maximum of 20 milligrams of statin. Dronedarone, similar to amiodarone in that classification of antiarrhythmics, has dosing limitations. Diltiazem, it's recommended to only go 10 milligram max of simvastatin and 240 milligrams of diltiazem. So we've definitely got some drug interactions. And this is one of the reasons, along with the intensity of simvastatin, the potency, why simvastatin has really kind of fallen out of favor. So drug interactions, and it's not probably quite as potent, particularly at, you know, 40 milligrams, 20 milligrams or less, as atorvastatin or rosuvastatin. So those two have definitely taken over a little bit more so as far as frequency of use compared to simvastatin. Other drug interactions, I think about drugs that may exacerbate rhabdomyolysis. So your gemfibrozil, your niacin, maybe to a lesser extent, phenofibrate. Daptomycin's another one that is contraindicated with statins and simvastatin as well. And then, of course, we talked about the CYP3A4 inhibitors, but we've also got the CYP3A4 inducers as well. So inducers like rifampin, phenytoin, maybe a St. John's wort. These are all drugs that could lower concentrations of simvastatin and ultimately could raise cholesterol then if we've got less simvastatin that's floating around and being able to do its effects. So remember that CYP3A4 interplay with simvastatin. Very, very critical. Lots of potential drug interactions there that can cause issues for sure. So I think that's going to wrap it up for today. Hopefully you picked up a few clinical pearls on simvastatin. And I thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Also, go to reallifepharmacology.com, click the free top 200 study guide, and go subscribe to the podcast and snag that PDF for free. with that said, I'm going to sign off for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can reach out to me at LinkedIn or at meded101.com. Take care and have a great rest of your day.